You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Ian, look at this.
Well, it's a police box. What on earth is he doing here? I mean, these things are usually on the street. I feel it. You feel it?
Faint vibration.
It's alive.
Earth Station Who. A fun mashup exploring over 60 years of the Doctor Who universe. Hold on tight. You never know where the crew of the TARDIS is going next.
Hey there, Whovians. Welcome to another episode of Earth Station Who. We are back, and we've got a great one. I say it all the time, but we're going back to the classic era. We are going back to William Hartnell and his second season as the Doctor. We're going back to the year 1965, and we are looking at the Space Museum, featuring Ian and Barbara and Vicky as the companions. And it's interesting because I don't think we've reviewed a lot of episodes with Vicky in them. I think this is, you know, one of the first, I think. And it's interesting because we've reviewed quite a bit of the First Doctor, but it's mostly, I think we've seen Dodo, we've seen Susan, of course, and we've seen Stephen, and, you know, we've various.
Ben and Polly.
Yeah, Ben and Polly, exactly. So it's interesting seeing Vicky and it's gonna be a lot of fun to talk about this one because this is my first time watching it. I've read the book, and to see it come to life was real interesting compared to what I had built up in my mind. So it's gonna be a lot of fun to talk about with this great crew we have tonight. Welcome back to the show, Kieran Moffat.
Thank you so much for having me. It is always a pleasure to be here.
It's always great to have you from the other side of the planet. So it's pretty cool. And of course, our regulars, Mr. Mike is here.
Howdy.
And Ms. Mary Ogle.
Hi, everybody. It is fantastic to be here.
It is great for us all to be together. It's interesting because it's something I look forward to is talking Doctor Who with you guys. And there is a crap load of Doctor Who news to talk about.
Unlike there usually is.
And this is wonderful because, you know, there were so many periods. What do you guys want to talk about? I don't know. Is there any Doctor Who? No. So-and-so was at a convention or something, but that's pretty much about it. And it's going to be, there's just so much to talk about right now. So we might as well jump in with both feet. You know, we got not only the first trailer, but we've gotten a second trailer already for the new season. And as of this recording, which is April 2nd, we are literally just over a month away from new Doctor Who. And that alone is just like worth being thrilled about. So we're going to have 8 episodes of Doctor Who, and we have the titles, and we also have who they're written by. So let's go over those real quick. The first episode is The Space Babies, and which alone is awesome.
I knew we were going to talk about this, and I want to ask everyone, do we think like Space Babies is going to be another New Earth Beast Below? Like, you know, the story that's okay, but it's just a little bit too weird for us to actually keep watching every year.
Maybe it's going to be some kind of horror. It's going to be totally not what you think it's going to be.
Yeah.
No, it totally is. And because this one is written by Russell T. Davies, actually.
He's written most of them, yeah.
Yeah, all but two. So, yeah.
Which is his MO. It was the same way when he did Doctor Who before.
Mm-hmm. Well, exactly.
He's written about the same number as he normally would write. It's just normally there would be an extra, 5 episodes written by other people
in
a previous season.
Days are gone.
Right. Yeah. I think when he first started, there was like 13 or 14 episodes.
Yeah.
First season. And there's only the 8. So it's interesting. And because we saw the Space Babies actually in the trailer this time.
Yep.
And it's just like, and they're talking babies. And it's just like, oh boy, this is good. This could be really, really good or really, really,
really dumb.
So I'll be very curious to see how that.
I think Davies is pretty used to walking that fine line, though, right?
Absorb a lot. That's all I need.
I mean, for those people not familiar with the comic, the Star Beast must have seemed very much like that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, yeah.
And Star Beast turned out to be one. They did an amazing job on that. They really, really did.
Have faith.
Yeah. All right.
Let's hope it's better than the farting aliens in the previous series.
Yeah. 5 years from now, we'll still be doing this podcast. You remember those damn space babies.
babies.
It's like, oh, God, space babies. So second one is the one I'm really looking forward to. This is The Devil's Chord by Russell T. Davies. This one is the Beatles episode. So I've heard that's also going to be the musical episode where they're actually going to be singing and performing. And yes, I know they did that in the Christmas special, folks. You know, so we had that already. But I think the whole episode is going to be pretty much based on music. And I think it's going to be awesome. And this is also Jinx Monsoon.
Yeah. I think we can safely say that to me, it seems fairly obvious that Jinx Monsoon's playing this sort of supernatural character, part of the group that the toy maker said was coming, and she controls music somehow. Like, you see in the trailer her literally controlling physical musical notation floating in the air.
Mm-hmm. You see a picture of Ruby with captured in the
in the staff.
Exactly. Yeah. So it looks interesting, and I love the doctor's look in this, and I love the scene when they're walking across Abbey Road. It's just frippin' awesome. and I'm such a Beatles geek. I was just like, this is just awesome. So,
yeah, I can't wait. I cannot wait.
So I think that's going to be awesome. And
then we get both those episodes released at the same time, right?
Yes, those two episodes we get the first night. So, folks, expect when we do the review, we're going to be reviewing those two episodes at the same episode. So we'll have an extra long one, but we'll review them separately. So
if Space Babies is a little questionable, we still have another one to look forward to.
Exactly. It still could be only an hour episode because we'll see how that goes. Then we have the return of Stephen Moffat with the third episode, Boom.
Yay.
And I've heard different stories for what this is going to be. The story, I think, is that Ruby and the doctor go to this planet under siege or at war, and the doctor is doing his typical rushing around, and he presses down on a landmine, and he has the hour to figure it out or something.
Yeah, to figure out, I think, how to get off the landmine without blowing up.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to be very interesting. And I hope they don't do something silly like, oh, here, let me use my Sonic. And then he's done.
Well, Stephen Moffat has always said he loves, his job in Doctor Who has always basically been to write the creepy, weird one in the middle of the series. And he seems like he's very much going straight for that again.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. I'm glad he's going into his wheelhouse. So.
And I think we talked about it last episode that, when we were talking about Moffat coming back, and when we were talking about what the director asked him what is his story basically going to be, and he said Hitchcock. So
amazing.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be pretty awesome with that. And then the fourth episode is going to be called 73 Yards. And that's also written by Russell T. I don't know anything about that.
Yeah, I don't have a clue. I have not heard anything about
it. And I'm not going to make up anything either. So then we have episode 5, which is Dot in the Bubble. And that's also written by Russell T. And again, I haven't heard anything.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard some speculation that it's sort of Black Mirror-ish, but I don't know.
I wouldn't be surprised if how popular Black Mirror has been, that they would do something like off of that, you know, type thing, type story. So that's very interesting to see. The next one is very interesting. It's called Rogue, and it's by Kate Herron and Ronnie Redmond. And that one is going to be very, very interesting because of who they have guest starring on that one. Because this is the Bridgerton-style episode.
Yeah, it's a... Yes. It's Regency. It's... We've got Jonathan Groff and Indira Varma in it. Indira Varma is playing a character called the Duchess. There's speculation, but we won't go too far into it, that Jonathan Groff might be the new Jack Harkness. I reckon it's going to be a historical episode, and they're going to meet Jane Austen. I think they're keeping that under wraps, but yeah, I think it's going to be Jane Austen.
It kind of would make sense, by the way.
It's kind of the main figure, you think.
Yeah, exactly. So I wouldn't be surprised with that. I don't know. Everyone's been speculating that Jonathan's going to be the new Captain Jack, but I don't want to see him be a new Captain Jack. I want to see him be another time agent, maybe, which would be fun.
Yeah.
I think that would be just as acceptable, because I love Barrowman as Captain Jack. I want to see him come back eventually.
Yeah, it's all circumstantial evidence too, really, because, you know, people have got this idea just from, you know, there's a bit where Shooty gives like a salute off screen in that like Rogue episode. And also Russell T. Davis has really been hyping up, well, at least last year when he announced that Jonathan Groff was in it, he was sort of hyping up, oh, it's someone, you know, well, who could it be? And also John Barrowman a few months ago very publicly said that he'd gotten some absolutely awful news that he couldn't tell anyone about. And everyone immediately went, well, he's been told some really bad news about Doctor Who. So
I would hate to think that. But, you know, just, I don't know if I don't want Captain Jack replaced. You know, there's so many different time agents out there.
Yeah.
And, you know,
there's no reason to do that. There's no need for that.
You go back to the 11th Doctor era, even, and when River Song got the, you know, vortex manipulator, and, you know, and he said, you know, he got it off the wrist of a very handsome time agent. Everyone's like, oh, it's Captain Jack, you know. And it's like, there are other time agents out there. So,
yeah, if Russell T, if you're going to replace anybody, like replace freaking Mickey, right? Like, don't replace, like,
I don't want the character to come back. No.
If you're not going to replace Mickey, then don't replace anybody. Because, like, that's the one that's like, I could point to and say, like, that guy needs to be replaced.
Needs to go. Yeah.
Yeah. That guy needs to go. And if the only reason to replace, you know, the character of Captain Jack with a new actor is because of, you know, whatever problematic things, then yeah, like Mickey's got to be the first one to go, right? Like, and then everybody can follow from that, but not from Captain Jack, not from Barrowman.
No, it's sad because the two I would never want to see played by other actors. I don't want to see anyone else play River Song, and I don't want to see anyone play Captain Jack. I think those characters are so tied into the, you know, with the actors. I don't want to see either of those, you know, changed out.
And of course, the irony is that both of those characters have been played by other actors.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So, I know. I don't have to like it, though.
But I mean, that would be the only reason. Like, so that makes no sense to me. Like, that would be very, very disappointing. Nobody wants another Captain Jack.
Mm-mm. No.
And I can't imagine that Russell would either.
No.
Yeah.
I don't mind seeing another Captain Jack type character. and right. who's maybe not immortal either, so we don't have to get the all the time.
Yeah.
I know. I mean, how exciting was it when James Marsters played another Time Ace? I mean, that was really cool. Like, there could be other, like, I would like to see, like you said, Mike, I would like to see other Time Aces as well.
No, agreed.
Yeah, I mean, agreed. That would actually be a fun spinoff to do.
It could be, yeah.
I think I'm contractually obliged at this point to point out that there is actually a series of Captain John Big Finish audios, and they're amazing. He breaks the fourth wall, and it's so much fun.
Cool.
Big That's Finish cool. plug done. There we go.
James Masters is playing.
Has Barrowman done any Big Finish as Captain Jack in the last recent years?
No.
There was one audio that was meant to come out. It was a special Torchwood story that would have featured Jack, Yanto, and the 10th Doctor. Big Finish pulled it, and they have not released it. So he has not been in any Torchwood media since then.
That sucks. I mean, of course, mileage may vary and everything, but I really just feel like that's it's just too much. Mm-hmm. Like, I think John has shown that he's very much sorry for all that stuff that happened, and that Chibnall was cast him after that, all that stuff. So, I mean, it's not like it's unprecedented for him to have an appearance after that.
No, agreed. No.
So, agreed, I mean, and I don't think the reaction was like, oh my God, no, everybody's not watching Doctor Who because, Barrowman's back. I mean, that was not the reaction at all. Instead, I thought it was the complete opposite.
Yeah, no, and the thing is, I mean, even if you decide you don't want Barrowman to come back, there's just no reason to replace the character. Come up with a new character.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
No, the last two conventions that Mary and I have been to, other than this last Pensacon, both Barrowman's been at both of those, and he's had sold out, basically totally full rooms.
Yeah, he continues to be a really good ambassador for Doctor Who. So.
Oh, very much so. And, as Judy said, he smelled very nice. So it was pretty awesome. She went and got pictures with him and everything. She said he was very, very nice to take pictures with. So it was cool. So, all right, after Rogue, we have The Legend of Ruby Sunday, written by Russell T. Davies. And there's rumor going around that we're finally going to find out Ruby's backstory in that one. So
the title would sort of
suggest that.
But also from what I'm hearing, it is also the first part of a two-parter that's going to lead
Makes into sense. The final.
And that, again, that's his MO as well.
Yes.
Yeah, that's very common with RTD.
Right. And so when that leads into the final, which is Empire of Death, also written by Russell T. And that also rumor going around, and I know we don't do tons of rumors, but that's been reported that Tennant's going to be in that one as Dr. 14. So, because he's already been, there's pictures of him on the set and everything. And everyone also is saying that's also in the trailer where you see the TARDIS landing at Avengers unit headquarters. basically that's from that episode. And we also see Rose in it, and we also see Mel. And so I think that's all from those stories.
Yeah, I can I just say I love the title, Empire of Death. It's so classic Who, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yes, it's so classic. It
follows the formula of Doctor Who and the Doctor Who and the Empire of Death. I wouldn't be wagering what is happening in what story, because we know the plot of some of the story, or at least features some of the stories. Like, there's one that's going to have these giant alien slugs, and like some political intrigue in Wales with a politician called Roger Ap Gwilym. There's clearly a unit episode that's happening. As we said, like, there's the battlefield. We don't know what episode that's happening on. There's also clearly an episode, I think, where Ruby and the Doctor get split up, or the Doctor isn't there anymore. And I think we've seen like that first trailer with the, like, they got that Bowie money now, right? Like,
they're using
changes, and that's clearly, I think, showing us what's happening in this season. They're going to be changing time. I think Mavity's going to come back. I think it's going to be a plot point that there's that, because that same woman was in that episode and also in Church of Ruby Sunday playing a different character. And it's going to be something about, like, you know, the stepping on the butterfly and her becoming what looked kind of like a Silurian, which was kind of cool. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this whole series is going to be like the Mandela effect or something, I reckon.
It'll be very interesting to see, you know, the whole thing with the butterfly effect, no pun intended, because yeah. Literally did that in there.
Yeah. And I think the pun was intended.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, no.
But it's going to be very interesting to see where it goes. And I'm very much looking forward to everything I've seen. And man, the effects look so much better.
The dinosaurs in the trailer.
Oh, yeah.
Look
exactly.
So good.
Exactly. They don't look like totally CGI'd. They actually look like, oh, this is big budget stuff.
Mm-hmm. So, well, they're doing it properly, right? They're doing what Lucasfilm was doing with The Mandalorian. You start with a practical effect, and then you add CG over the top of that.
Sure.
To really just bring it to life.
Well, exactly. And they're learning a lot from, you know, because as technology changes, it's getting cheaper and cheaper to do really good special effects. But they also have a bigger and bigger budget. So that's going to be very interesting to see. And it's interesting, the advert that I'm looking at with, you know, the season, what they're calling it, season one, we'll call it season 14 or season whatever. Yeah, exactly. And it's interesting though, at the bottom it says BBC, Bad Wolf, and Disney Plus all across the bottom. And so
yeah
so it's very interesting to see, and I'm looking forward to seeing what comes with us. And a month can't get here soon enough.
Are they still filming Wales?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that where Bad Wolf is? Is that the way where the studio is located ever still?
What I have to keep reminding people that the BBC don't own the rights to Doctor Who anymore. Bad Wolf does. Mm-hmm. Bad Wolf owns the rights, and they make it for the BBC and Disney Plus. And if Disney pulled out tomorrow, they'd be making it just for the BBC. And if the BBC pulled out tomorrow, they'd be making it just for Disney Plus. Bad Wolf control it now.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Well, RTD has talked about that and about how he thinks BBC is probably going away.
Which is unfortunate and sad.
We might as well jump right into that, because that was actually my second thing that we were going to talk about, is that, you know, Russell T came out and saying, you know, what he's planning on is, you know, he's solidifying it that Doctor Who will continue after BBC is gone. And that, you know, it's not all dependent on BBC budgeting and BBC, mm-hmm. you know, anything anymore. And that, you know, it's in good hands, and that Doctor Who will continue.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because I was just going to say, he and Jane Tranter own Bad Wolf. Right. So he's controlling Doctor Who. And yeah, it is very sad that the BBC, like, he... I was very sad when I read that article, because he has always been a huge champion of the BBC. For years, people have been calling to cut the BBC or privatize the BBC, and he has always been the first person to call out and say, no, we can't make the things we want to make without the BBC as it is. And I'm really sad that he's kind of gotten to the point where he's gone, yep, no, it is going to die.
Yeah, this is one of those models. I mean, we've got that sort of something. We've got PBS here in the States, which faces the same battle all the time, and people, and it's been more and more difficult as the years have come, especially now with streaming, to give it some actually reason for being, because it just seems like it doesn't need to happen, because there's so many other things that are like it. Although much like the BBC, PBS provides some things that nobody else provides. And there is some, you know, for all its flaws, and as much as we like to bash the BBC, which we've done on many occasions, not as many times as Chibnall, but, you know, we wouldn't have Doctor Who without the BBC.
Oh, totally.
Right.
It's the thing about a national broadcaster, because, of course, Australia has the same sort of thing, the ABC, but the BBC is slightly different. ABC is run by taxpayer funds, whereas the BBC has the license fee, where if you own a television, you pay a license. I'm not sure that anyone can really comprehend how different a system that is to any other network on the planet. It is free from advertiser bias. It is free from political agenda as much as it can be. And always the right are calling out saying that these networks are left biased. They're not. They're just calling out right bias. And I think that's, you know, this is an area that people, the things that the BBC do to help people get into media cannot be, no other network on the planet has an open writer's room where you can go and get scripts for BBC shows, movies, audio dramas, and learn how to write and get advice from writers. You know, no other network on the planet would ever make a show like Doctor Who, would make things just for people to watch. I mean, the thing about the BBC and the ABC, you can get shows in audio descriptive. You know, they have to make content specifically for that country, for the people who are in that country, ethnic minorities that are in that country, and disabilities that exist within that country. They have to make that. Netflix doesn't have that. Like, Netflix doesn't
care.
Anyone telling it it has to.
No, Netflix just raising their money and raising their fees each month.
Whereas the BBC doesn't have to doesn't automatically raise its fees unless the government cuts its funding, and because it has government oversight, it has to make the things that people need.
Right.
It's not capitalist. It's, you know, it is for people. Mm-hmm. And I'm really sad to see the BBC go. I mean, it's not dead yet, and no. I think that's the worst thing about this article is that now people are going to go, oh, the BBC is going to die. And so once you start thinking that, then it's going to tip over into it.
Right.
I mean, it is the PBS is a similar situation, and it has really eroded over time. The PBS we have now is not the PBS we had when we were growing up.
Oh, not nowhere near as.
No, it's much more influenced by commercialism, big corporations.
Whenever you watch something on PBS now, like Masterpiece or something, or one of the concerts or one of the dramas sponsored by Viking or sponsored by, you know, Travelocity or whatever, you know, it's all these different organizations, and it's a commercial for that organization that they play at the beginning of the show. At least there's no commercial breaks during the shows type thing. So, and, you know, you're exactly right, Mary. PBS is a shadow of what it is used to be, but that's because of government cuts, depending on the administration that's in power.
Would, like, to use PBS as an example, do you think any network, private network in America today would make Sesame Street? Like, would they create Sesame Street to put out?
No,
like, well, no one would do that.
Yeah, not in the way.
No,
it exists. Yeah,
it exists.
You would see a Pepsi product, or you would see something from Fisher Price, or something in it, or something, you know, product placement all over, because the network. That's why you don't see Saturday morning cartoons anymore, because, you know, there's no money in it, you know, type thing, by the networks.
I mean, first run Sesame Street isn't on PBS anymore either.
No, it's HBO.
It got sold.
Or Max. Sorry.
I mean, it's still, but if, yeah. And the other thing about PBS too, is that it's still run, each station of it is still run on a local level. So that there are differences depending on what area you're in of the country. You might see different programming. You'll see programming at different times. There are certain things that are on a national PBS level, but then there's a lot of programming, a lot of funding that's done for small films, independent films, and local channels or low community-based channels or programming that doesn't exist anywhere else either. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it does still serve a purpose. And it is interesting that, you know, I think they're linked to BBC just because, you know, the BBC and PBS have that relationship that they've had for decades, as long as I've been alive anyway, where the PBS was how we watched a lot of shows from BBC in America.
That was pretty much the only way to watch them.
Exactly.
That's how we used to watch, like, Masterpiece or
Doctor Who. I mean, I think most of us old fogies, like, you know, grew up watching it on PBS.
But that's interesting. When I first started watching Doctor Who, it was not on PBS. It was on WOR in New York, which is not a PBS station.
That's weird.
Yeah. So it was.
And of course, your Masterpiece, because I'd heard a lot about PBS Masterpiece and stuff like that. That's not one show. It's, you know, this is dozens upon dozens of BBC shows that they then choose to put out as, you know, one thing. People forget about the BBC that there are four television channels and eight radio channels, like that are free to the public, or, you know, part of your license fee, which basically, sure, if you pay, it's taxation, right? You pay a small amount of something to be able to use, like, everyone buys in a small amount, so you've all got access to it. Like, some of the radio just wouldn't exist, like, some of the stuff I grew up on, you know.
Here in the States, we also have National Public Radio, NPR. Yep. Mm-hmm. And that, again, is very, very, you know, select, depending where you live. It has a lot of national programming, but it also has a lot of local programming, stuff you won't hear on something other than like a college radio station, or, you know, or more of a mom and pop type station. You'll hear some of those programs on NPR, you know, like the public service. Or we have a guy on Saturday night named H. Johnson. He brings in his own jazz records and blues. And it's just amazing. You know, you won't hear that on other radio stations and stuff. So we went on a tangent there.
Well, you know, I mean, but I think, you know, I mean, for a lot of younger listeners, watchers, viewers of ours or whatever, people who are new to Who, it might not seem to mean a lot. You know, the article about the BBC going away, I mean, what's the difference? Who's producing Doctor Who, right? Like, you know, certainly there's questions as to, it's been questionable at the times that some of the things that BBC has done with Doctor Who. And so that's been always up for grabs, but that's going to be the case no matter who's running or who owns Doctor Who. You know, as much as we love RTD, I mean, he's going to make some decisions that we're going to be like, what the hell, dude? and you know, where does it go from there? Like, where does it, you know, where does Doctor Who go from there? Like, because Russell's not planning, he's not going to run it for the rest of it. That's not going to be his life from now on, right? Like, is running Doctor Who. So what happens after a few years and all of that? So, you know, and if Bad Wolf goes under, what happens? And, you know, does some group come and scoop it up, the IP or whatever? Like, now it is kind of odd. It is kind of unsettling that if Doctor Who's not owned by the BBC anymore, like, now it just seems like another IP that's floating out there, and it's in good hands now, but it might not be at some point. You know, it's really kind of tenuous as to where, like, what could happen with it. I was thinking, as long as BBC owned it, it would never end.
Yeah, but the BBC's going to go under.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, if it does, you know, I mean, certainly it, you know, but see, they've been talking about PBS going under for decades.
Well, I mean, it sort of halfway has, in my opinion, because its mission has eroded a lot since it began. not completely. I mean, it's still hanging on, and it that's not that they're not trying and there aren't dedicated people still working at PBS, but it is, you know, it's degraded over time. And, you know, it's the same. It was attacked by the right wing here too. And that's what started the decline, is the constant attacks
from the right. Exactly.
Right. From the right. Just like public education, you know, it's the selfishness.
Well, look at all the,
just,
you know,
always amazes me.
All the art programs, all the different, you know, culture and such that has been cut in theater from, you know, I hate to say it, a certain party and organization in this country and all around the world in a lot of cases. So, and it's really pretty crappy. So, you know, all right, let's hop off this. this is a doctor.
And then it turned into a political discussion.
Wow. Can I just dial back a lot, like, actually, because one thing that, and this is sort of, maybe I don't know how Russell's talked about this, and this is something that I think that could help. And I almost got there before we started talking about the BBC, but I'm really surprised. Like, that's my question. That's why my question was where Bad Wolf was and everything like that, because I'm really surprised that if they haven't already, that Russell and them haven't created a soundstage like The Volume there. Because I would imagine that.
Oh, they have. Huge soundstages there.
Right. My understanding is they don't have anything quite like The Volume yet. Which is a virtual production. That's where the Mandalorian's filmed. That's where all the Star Wars stuff is filmed. They have one now, I think, in Los Angeles, and that's where, like, a lot of the Star Trek stuff is filmed. Like, and I would imagine that there would be something perfect for what then Doctor Who needs would be, let alone a lot of other needs too, that would be something that they could, you know, continue to make money on and support that studio.
But Mike, if they build that, what will happen to all those wonderful quarries in Wales?
How will the quarries make money, Mike?
Exactly. That's how they make money nowadays.
I'm not saying occasionally you couldn't go out and do a quarry, but I don't know. When's the last time we saw a quarry in Doctor Who?
During Jodie's era?
Yeah, we did actually see a quarry.
So, if you remember Wild Blue Yonder, that corridor thing they were in.
Yes.
That was to scale on a soundstage.
Yes.
Like, that was full length on a soundstage. As far as I'm aware, Bad Wolf, look, I'm going to quote Russell here. Nothing is entirely defensible or condemnable. So, which that was what he said about the BBC when he was defending it. But, like, there's always going to be something wrong with it. But Bad Wolf, I think, are doing a fantastic job. They they take on local, like, Welsh people to, like, help with productions, things like that. They're a great employer, and also they're bringing up Doctor Who talent. Like, the writer, director, producer Scott Hancock from Big Finish is now the script editor for Doctor Who, and he works closely with Russell T. Davis. And you can tell that he is being put in a position to move up, and he's going to make a great job of it when he does. Mm-hmm. So this is what Bad Wolf's doing, I think.
And the fact that he's always said that he wants Doctor Who not just to be a series that airs, like, once every couple of years, but he wants it to be franchise that's always on. With mm-hmm. not, if it's not Doctor Who, it's a spinoff here, it's a spinoff there, it's a movie here. Like, he wants constant content to be mm-hmm. produced,
yep.
and that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, like the MCU. Like the MCU,
just be careful,
you should not
you
be waiting a couple of months.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, which must scare the crap out of Disney, because they're already like, I think we overdid it with the MCU and Star Wars.
Yeah. Oversaturated it.
Yeah. Oops.
Oops, we did it again. There we go. Well, that's the big news, you know. If you have any, you know, comments or thoughts, address it to Mike Gordon at @herstationwho, or feedback @herstationwho is the best way to get in touch with everybody. So,
or just step out onto your balcony and scream into the void.
Just like the rest of us, just like we're doing right now.
We just happen to have cameras in front of us. That's all right. Let's take a quick break and we will be back in a moment. And we are going to be talking all about the Space Museum.
Check out the Modern Musicology podcast, where each week we talk about things like
what makes a great drummer,
our favorite rock documentaries,
songs we love by artists we don't love,
our favorite concert memories,
songs that should have been singles,
and all of our favorite music from the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and now.
Do not use Modern Musicology if you're allergic to it. Modern Musicology may produce itching, dizziness, vertigo, temporary blindness, or heart palpitations. Do not taunt Modern Musicology.
Ask your doctor about switching to Modern Musicology.
Welcome back. Now we are going back to the wonderful year of 1965. This ran from the 24th of April, 1965, to the 15th of May, 1965. So literally almost exactly 59 years ago. So this was an interesting story because it played with a little bit of timey-wimey stuff that, you know, the characters were out of time a little bit and saw what their future might be. And
not a good one.
And so it was interesting that we got to see this. And what was, you know, is this your first time seeing this? Or was this, you know, have you anyone seen this one before?
This was my first time seeing it. I haven't seen a whole lot of the First Doctor except for what we've watched together. Yeah, and actually, it was not exactly what I was expecting. I enjoyed it more than I thought I was going to be.
Me too, because when they said, oh, it's, you know, when I read the synopsis, I was like, this is going to be four parts, or is this a two-parter, or, you know, something.
Yeah, I mean, it had filler. But,
oh, you think?
Yeah, it was still enjoyable, especially the first episode. The first, mm-hmm. It's worth watching for the first episode alone. Great cliffhanger.
Yeah, this is my first time watching this, and like you were saying, Mike, you know, it's weird because I checked and I was like, wow, this is like the fifth story I've seen with Vicky, and yet every time I watch a story with Vicky, I'm like, have I seen Vicky before?
not making a big impression on you.
No, because I forgot we had watched The Meddling Monk. And
yeah, we've seen The Meddling Monk, we've seen Web Planet, we've seen Galaxy 4, you know, we've seen, like, I've seen all these episodes with her, these stories with her. And so it's kind of like, so this is not my first time with Vicky, but yet I was watching this and like the first hour, the first part of it, I'm like, I've seen Vicky. Like, I'm just looking at her and she's not ringing any bells for me whatsoever. And
I mean, she just feels like Susan to me.
I mean, obviously there's that where, you know, so she's a Susan replacement, and yet she's, in some ways, the character is a little bit, has more agency, is a little bit better than a lot of times the way Susan was depicted. She doesn't scream as much. And I mean, in this story, she actually does some stuff, which is like, you know, pretty cool. Yeah, you know, this one is one of those ones where I don't know. I'm still mulling it over. As much as I did enjoy the intrigue of the first half hour, the first part, right? Yes. It sort of like doesn't matter at all for the rest of the show, like the rest of the story. Like the other three episodes are just like, you know what? We don't just forget about that first half hour because it doesn't really matter at all. And so it is kind of a weirdly built story. And it seems like the first part is just kind of tacked on, which is odd because I don't think they work that way. I think they tack stuff on at the end, usually not at the beginning. So, I just found it, but I mean, the premise is interesting. The use of, the first Doctor who disappears in a whole episode as well. It's been a while since I've seen Ian and Barbara, and I like them. I do really like Ian and Barbara.
They're great.
And, so the dynamic between, the three of them, the Doctor and Ian and Barbara, I think are really working well here. The other story, the other characters here don't really do much for me. It is interesting to see, the last two episodes had, in my name on these credits, which was pretty cool. an actor with my name played Azuron, so that was pretty awesome. And to find out that Jeremy Bullock, Boba Fett himself, appears as Tor in these episodes is kind of fun. But apart from that, the whole plot line is just kind of there, and it just kind of it's kind of flat. So there wasn't a lot after the premise was originally initialized. It just became just typical, like, oh, here's a rebellion, and then it's gonna end up really nicely, like all sweet and like tied in a bow, and then they're gonna split, and it just seemed kind of like ordinary after that.
It's two stories, right? It's two different stories. Yeah. I have this on the collector's Blu-ray edition, so I read through the booklet, and apparently this story was heavily cut. Like the script was heavily edited and cut and screwed with, which is probably why it doesn't feel that cohesive. It's nice. I don't watch the first and second Doctor as much as I probably should, because I more often than not go for third Doctor onwards, not because of color, but because of pacing. After the third Doctor, they'd worked out what the pacing was, because I always try and remind people that Doctor Who in its early in the classic series was not a series, it was a serial, right? It was serialized, it was made to go, like, the difference between a series and a serial is a series is you put as many episodes as you need, right? A serial is you fill out the episodes that are given to you.
Right.
You have to put it out over six episodes. Sometimes the story does not need six episodes.
Most of the time.
Yep. Most of the time, oh, exactly. Right?
And that's why in the first two Doctors, the storylines had, each one of them had its own title.
Yes, exactly. It was, and they don't have an end, right?
They
end it like the next episode carries straight on.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed this. I liked the premise of the museum. Yeah, the rebellion was a bit, shall I say, eyebrow raising? Is that too much of a bad joke on that?
I don't know what you're talking about there.
Eyebrows times two. Yes. I do have to give him credit. I was like, well, that's something I haven't seen before.
It's the Trek manual, right? Like, if you want an alien, you either adjust the eyebrows, the nose, or the forehead. Like, that whole area there, that's how you make an alien.
It felt very Space 1999 to me.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. All the the rebellion consisted of a bunch of young dudes with double eyebrows. I mean, that was like, and wearing the same outfit, you know, and then the bad guys or the museum people are just, they have the same outfit and the same hair and all that. And that's the only difference between them. And it is kind of lazy, but, it's simplified storytelling.
Well, it's cheap.
Yeah, it's cheap and it's simplified storytelling. They're not trying to, like, do anything too radical back,
This weren't even costumes the rebels were wearing. They're black shirts and black pants.
Yeah, exactly.
Like what they used to tell us to wear to choir,
Yeah. Like if you're putting on a play and you don't want to do costumes, it's literally just black shirt, black pants,
right.
I loved the effects. For 1965, the effects were pretty effective. Good. Like when there's that what's clearly some sort of engine or something, and I almost had to say Susan, when Vicky walks over to it.
That's what we're all feeling.
Look, it's unfortunate for her that she acts like Susan and also shares a partial name with a much better character,
yeah.
Victoria. So,
yeah,
when she puts her hand through what is clearly just an overexposed image, right? It's just superimposed mm-hmm. over the top. It's really well done. Like, yes. Just the effort they went to is, like, they made a lot from nothing, right? Early 60s Doctor Who is, if I'm to quote Utopia here, food and string and staples. Like, that's what they're working with. And it came out really well.
Yeah, and the props are actually pretty fun too. Oh, yeah. The sets
are not too bad, and the ship graveyard or exhibit with the ships when they first land is pretty cool looking.
Yes.
And the effect of them being like sort of on display, like putting in like action figures, whatever, sealed up. Like, that looks pretty impressive. Actually, I thought that looked really impressive because I was like, are those, like, they didn't seem like they were actors standing still because I really couldn't see them breathe. And yet they didn't seem like they were cardboard cutouts or whatever. I was like, how are they doing that?
Yeah,
that
I was wondering really, that too.
That like, looks
they
really good.
Really stay that still?
Yeah. To get like four people to stand like that still, I was like, wow, that's pretty solid.
It was interesting, but yeah, I agree about the props were really, really well, except for that ray gun that.
Oh yeah,
Ian that looked like out a of toy. The container, and then he gave it to Vicky, and Vicky was just like playing with it and like twirling it around.
Oh no, I was like, yeah, give the gun to the kid.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that didn't make any sense.
Apparently, Jeremy Bullock said that their guns, that they had like a flashing light bulb on the end, which. I don't know, I'm sure I've said it before, like old, like 60s to 80s Doctor Who had this thing, I think it was the type of cameras they used, that if they used a certain type of bright light, it caused like a screen burn. Like, I love seeing that. So these guns do that. And he said sometimes the lights just didn't go off and they still used the takes because the BBC, you needed to be done. In, like, you have 4 hours to record this, otherwise all the lights go off.
We do not care if you mess up lines. We do not care exactly. What happens.
Nope. And for complaints about BBC, listen to the first part of the show. Yeah.
and of course...
It's interesting with this episode because I was reading some information on it and the gentleman who wrote this episode, it was his first time doing science fiction. He had never done any sci-fi before.
It's not bad for first time.
Yeah, I think he did pretty well, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like
I don't think it's very science fiction-y.
Well, look, we can talk about that. For example, like Russell T. Davis is saying lately, like, Doctor Who is more fantasy than science fiction, which I agree with. The only difference between science fiction and fantasy is like, if you have a flying ship, fantasy, you just have to accept it. Science fiction, they explain why. That's literally the only difference between the two of them. And yeah, that's Doctor Who. You don't quite explain why things are happening. I love
pretty much never explain it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's a joke, right? Stephen Moffat even like made it into a trope in The Curse of Fatal Death. I'll explain later. And like the doctor constantly saying, oh, I'll explain later.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Speaking of the doctor, the reason he wasn't in one of the episodes was because it was a serial and it was recorded literally the week before air and they didn't actually take any breaks. Like the gap between season one and two was only a couple of weeks. Like they went constantly. The reason he's not in it is because he's taking a week off.
Mm-hmm.
So they literally just wrote him out of it for a week. And that happened a lot. Like in the Celestial Toy Maker.
Right.
That, like, he's invisible for, like, a whole episode. And that was because he took the week off. Mind you, his health was failing at that point. So
his health was failing, and that was also when they originally started talking about replacing him, actually. Because when he disappeared in the Celestial Toy Maker, they talked about maybe when he came back, he'd be a different person. And so, you know, that's where the whole idea of, they didn't call it regeneration or anything back then.
But it wasn't until
they didn't call regeneration until Tom Baker's Pertwee went into Tom Baker.
Yeah, they called it a renewal a couple of times.
Yes.
Yeah,
exactly. So it's interesting stuff. And I thought Ian was awesome in this. He was kicking butt and taking names.
He gets emotional, man. He is angry.
Mm-hmm. He's angry, and yeah, you're right. He was he had attacked, like, I think he takes out like 4 or 5 guards in a row, and I was just like, damn, I don't remember Ian like doing this, but.
Mm-hmm.
And Barbara, like, you know, she's she's the one who's like, she takes after this paralyzing like mist attacks her and the guy there. I can't think of his name, but anyway, he's like, the guy just passes out, and she's like, let's go. Like, she's just like, she practically picks him up and carries him out there, and I'm going, damn, girl.
Yeah, I was thinking, boy, that is the longest acting gas. I mean, it takes forever, apparently, to take you down.
Well, it did. I guess it worked to a point, because they did go down and then they got right back up. So I was like, wow, okay, so it must be like, it must work and then not work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was they had too much of it.
It's like, oh, we just had that right amount and it worked and paralyzed them, but then we used some more and then it unparalyzed them.
Felt like the Chumbawamba song. I get knocked out.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I mean, I do give them some credit, because yes, they do set up this sort of they're trying to set up this sort of time issue with like trying to fight fate, or, you know, to try to not have what happens, or to foresee what happens and then try to fight it. And go against it and fight like a fixed point, but or whatever. But it just, they forget about it like most of the rest of the story. Like, they start the premise in the beginning, and then they just by the end, they're just like, well, I guess we just didn't do what we were supposed to do or something. And they just wave it off.
Mm-hmm.
Just chalk on the coup board. There we go.
Just another
up here in the corner.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, with the rebellion thing, I mean, they're still doing that, like, you know, they still go on to do that kind of thing like years and decades and decades.
Yeah, they do that now.
Yes. So I mean, it is a trope that we see too much, and it's done better in a lot of ways too. This is, you know, I mean, what are they fighting against? They don't even seem to realize it. Like, they just don't, like, yeah, I can't get behind these rebels.
Am I going to get you guys in trouble if I say the Doctor's had his hand in more regime changes than the CIA?
No.
I think that's fair.
You're suddenly on a list.
We're already on the list. Yeah, we were put on a list a long time ago.
Oh, yes. Lists are good. But it's interesting, too. The bad guys were bad, but it was only because they were, you know, basically whoever came to the planet that they didn't agree with, they put them up as displays.
Yeah, that's actually pretty horrifying.
Yeah.
That's the thing, right?
They literally embalmed the Doctor.
There are these people, they're stuck on this planet that used to be a thriving civilization. They're based in a museum for some reason. Again, there's two different stories working here. There's the regime story, and then there's the museum story. And they're in the museum, and like, they're so bored because they're out in this outpost, and no one from their main planet's talking to them. They don't want to be there. They don't want to be part of it. And the first people who come along in days, months, years, they're like, we're going to put them in as part of the museum. Surely you want the diversion of, you know, talking to them. Maybe you'd like to show them through the why are you keeping the museum? Like, suddenly the planet is free, the regime has changed, and what do? They cart everything out of the museum.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even if your end goal is to embalm them in the end, wouldn't you want to, like take advantage and show them the museum first?
I think it's only,
and you will be right over there.
But they're only dismantling the museum so that there's no museum to have to capture and display the Doctor and his companion.
Yes.
That's the story reason. That's the story reason, right? They don't, because they don't care either way, but they're like, no, we have to get rid of the museum, because if there's no museum, then our future won't be, that will be on display.
Yeah.
So it's just like, and
it
then,
just seems,
you know,
very
and
regressive.
And I love the fact that, you know, as they're dismantling, the Doctor's like, hey, I'll take that piece of equipment. Thank you.
And when he took it, it was the typical, like you said earlier, Doctor, what is this? And it's like, oh, I'll explain it to you later. Like,
yeah, because it's the main plot point of the next story, which is the chase.
Yeah, absolutely.
The time space visualizer. But no, like this group of young people who I don't understand. Like, obviously, they've been on this planet for ages. But all the people there are young. Again, they didn't really think it through. But then their first act as a independent nation is to go, no, we must go into a dark age and remove any foreign technology that might possibly help us.
After they said the reason they were taken over is because they were a group
they were less advanced.
They were pacifists. And it's just like, well, there goes all your technology right there.
I just want to see the fast forward.
But it was interesting too, because what he said, you know, that I think it was Ian said to one of them, why aren't there older, you know, older people of your race? And they said, oh, the Moroks. Took all our elders to other planets to be slaves there. And as they get older, they, you know, they take them. And so it was just like, oh, okay.
They did explain it away.
Yeah.
Not well, but I mean,
not in a manner that made any sense whatsoever.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah. So I think to me, the highlight of the whole storyline, the sequence that I'm just like, this is really interesting, is in the beginning, when the Doctor and his three companions are walking through the museum, they turn a corner and they see a Dalek. And I love how even in 1965, granted, it's fresher for them because they've had a couple of adventures with the Daleks. The Daleks are a huge thing there. But still, that tension, whenever the Dalek and the Doctor are in a room together, it's palpable, and it's there. The goosebumps on the arm start up, like you just can sense it. It kind of undermines it a little bit, like later on when the Doctor like gets in the suit, like gets in the Dalek.
Yeah,
that was
bizarre.
That was really off-putting. but that first, and then, you know, and Ian and Barbara, are they feel it too? I mean, it's all. Because that's something that the actors are doing, right? The actors are making that tension, and they are why you feel that way. And Vicky knows about them, even though she's never experienced them before. She's like, oh, that's what one looks like. She's like, that doesn't really look that frightening. And they're like, it is. And that's because you've never faced them. It really is a powerful moment. And it shows that, you know, when given the material, that these actors can really make moments, I think.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly. And the acting wasn't bad by any means. And I actually did enjoy the scene where the Doctor was hiding inside the Dalek. I thought that was pretty awesome.
He did his best to like do the voice, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
But it was just, I was just looking at that thinking, okay, you're insane. Mm-hmm. You're sitting in this most hated creature in the universe that is your worst enemy, and you're making fun. And it just, to me, it just like struck the wrong chord.
Mm-hmm. Also, who built this museum, right? Like, who has got one of the most powerful beings in the universe, like a Dalek, and it's just put it there with a Dalek from Skaro? Like, they've gone to Skaro and they've got a Dalek and they've built this museum with it as an exhibit. What? Like, is there a stuffed Sontaran around the corner? Like,
I mean, it's just this. It is just the case. It's not.
Yeah, they could have just, like, you know, gone to one of the planets that they were at war with and just picked up an empty suit.
Because they say they've conquered a whole bunch of planets. I mean, they're a warrior race.
Well, exactly. Well, that's like in the episode Dalek when Chris Eccleston's doctor is walking through the museum and he sees the Cyberman head.
It's a very similar, I mean, it's a very similar vibe, you know, when Eccleston sees the Dalek for the first time and when the first doctor and Ian and Barbara see it here in this museum, I got, it was so similar. And I was like, wow, this is like, you know, 50 years apart that they're filming these and yet the same effect and it still works.
The best example of that, to my mind, is The Stolen Earth, where the Daleks come over the radio, exterminate, and Sarah Jane Smith hears it and grabs her son. All she says is, "You're so young." Like, that's literally all she said. And that, like, that's genuinely terrifying. You're right. Like, it's that level. The Daleks are still terrifying, but it's got to be the way that they're reacted to.
That's what makes the Daleks the Daleks. Looking at the Dalek for years as a doctor, you know, before I really got into Doctor Who, I would see Daleks like in magazines, pictures, whatever. And I'd just be like, these just don't look intimidating at all. You start watching Doctor Who and all of a sudden you're like, these things are freaking scary.
And that's not so bad because the Daleks had only appeared twice before this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty amazing.
They're just really selling it.
Yep.
Well, and like,
it's the highlight for me anyway.
They appeared in The Daleks. And then the BBC saw how much people liked The Daleks and they went, we're going to hammer this out. The next one is The Dalek Invasion of Earth. Like, we want people to see Daleks going down their street.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. And it's like, you're going to see them going across the London Bridge. There you go. You know, type thing.
Back in the days when you could record on a Sunday and there wouldn't be anyone out.
Right. Yeah. Those days are long gone.
Oh, yeah. So
yeah, I did also like the sequence the doctor gets kidnapped and twice and then you know he's processed and Ian makes them reverse the process and the guy's just like the bad guy's just like, nah, it's not gonna work, we've never done this before, it's not, you know, and the doctor comes back out of it with no real explanation, but it's the doctor, so we get it, you know, it's cool. I don't think the guy really did a good job selling it as far as the villain saying like, this is not reversible. You guys, we can try it, but it's not going to work. But then when the doctor does get out of it, I don't think he does a really good job selling it. Like how amazed he should be that this happened. Like, oh my God, it's like he can survive, reverse it, you know, but, and then, you know, within 5 minutes, it's like, we're going to put you back under them. Like, it's just like, oh, geez.
You can always tell what kind of serial it is by how many times the doctor and the companion escape but are then captured again.
Yeah.
By how they have to stretch it out. Like, for what I was doing the other week, me and my co-host did Frontier in Space, and the doctor and Joe get escape and captured. Three times, four or five times.
Yeah.
Like it just keeps happening. And that's kind of what it felt like. I was watching this, and when he was just like, aha, now we've got the upper hand on you, we're going to freeze the doctor and you now. And I thought, are they going to like just freeze and then unfreeze like one more person each time? Is that what's going to happen in this story? Thankfully, that did not happen. No. Otherwise, it would have been a 7-episode story, and I would have been sitting there going, God.
Which is not unlike them, but yeah, I'm glad we didn't have to.
Yes.
Any final thoughts before we go ahead and rate this one? Wow. Okay.
I mean, I think we've done a pretty good, pretty good job at extending it as much as we have.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. This has been an interesting episode tonight, folks, for sure. Oh, yeah. All right. 1 out of 5 TARDISes, 1 being the worst, 5 being the best. Mr. Mike, you get to go first tonight.
I am going to give this one a 3. three TARDISes. There's nothing terribly like, you know, terrible in this one, like the last story we reviewed.
Wow.
Yeah, everything that's done in this one is like, you know, at least way better than well, yeah.
Green glowing garbage bags? What do you mean?
Well, just not the garbage bag part, but the green phallic garbage bags. And there are some moments in this, like, it to see the First Doctor in action, William Hartnell, obviously he's still, you know, he's aging. And there are some points where you're kind of like, wow, he's still, you know, he messes up. They have to leave it in because that's the best take they could get out of the short, you know, time that they're doing it. But, I think, I think William Hartnell, William Russell and Jacqueline Hill all still have that great chemistry, which I like to see. So, that pushes this storyline along. It's pretty basic and pretty forgettable after the first, you know, certainly the first part. The rest three parts are just kind of like there. But it's not, you know, offensively bad. It's just there. I can't see, you know, there's not a lot to bring people to watch this, but then there's also not like, I can't say don't watch this ever because it's still kind of nice to see them do this. It's better than seeing them try to sing. So and so I give it a 3, and you know, it's always cool to see my name on the credits of anything, but like a episode of Doctor Who, I'm kind of like, wow, I never knew that it happened. So
just pick up any album by Phish. Your name will be there, Mr. Gordon.
Yes, but that's not Doctor Who.
I know. All right. You're next.
I think it's a 3. It's not one of the most enjoyable First Doctor stories. Oh, look, honestly, the higher rating comes from the first episode. Like, the first episode was a great premise. Didn't stick the landing. Look, the eyebrows. Look, I really enjoyed it. It has some goofy things that early Doctor Who does. With episodes like this, I sort of rate it by how often I felt the urge to look at my phone. And it was middling. It was not as bad as I tried watching The Abominable Snowmen not long ago, and that one had me reaching for my phone every few minutes. So it was good. 3 TARDISes.
Okay. Mary?
I think I'm going to give it a 3.5. First episode is a 4 for me because I really enjoyed the first episode. I thought they set up the premise really well. It was a great cliffhanger. And, the museum was kind of fun with all the gadgets. And, I mean, Vicky's a Susan clone, but that was okay. I didn't really mind. She at least got to do some stuff in here. It's the rest of it's a 3. I mean, it really starts falling apart in the later episodes. And they're just kind of trying to fill time, which is too bad because I don't think they needed to do that. I think they had a good story here and they could have done a better job of telling it, it felt like the script had been gutted. I have a feeling the written script was probably better than what got filmed, but I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it more than I thought I was going to be honest. I did not have high expectations, and especially the first episode. So 3.5, kind of in the middle.
Not bad. All right. I'm going to do 3.5 also, but the extra half for me comes from the eyebrows. They raised me enough to have it come back for that. And
they raised your score.
They raised the
score. Jeremy Bullock said they used to drift down his face. Like they used to drift down.
The glue wasn't strong enough.
Yeah.
That's funny. But yeah, I agree with what everyone's saying. The first episode, the premise was awesome. But you know, like Mary said, they did not stick the landing. the last episode was rushed. The last episode, it was like, it was not good. And it could have been so much better and so much, you know, so much better written out story wise, but it was enjoyable. I enjoyed seeing it for the first time. And you know what? Like you said, Ian and Barbara made this for me. They were both awesome.
They were good. Yeah.
And everything. Vicky, not so much. And everything.
I'm her sure with, next time I see an episode with Vicky on it, I'll be like, have I seen her before?
Exactly. Exactly. I feel bad for her because, you know.
I kind of did too. I mean, nobody, I mean, you know, who wants that? But
exactly. Because we still have to review The Chase. We still have to review the episode before this one. So, you know, because we haven't done that one, which was The Crusade. So, you know, and I think all those are available.
No, I don't. The Crusade's not.
No? Damn. I was still looking forward to seeing more Vicky, so.
But we haven't seen the Romans. We haven't seen the Rescue. So there's still, yeah, there's still some with Vicky that we have on our plate.
Oh, yeah. Lucky us. I can't wait.
Thank God.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. The tongue-in-cheek here is starting to hurt a little.
But you know what? You know what? At least to me, like, it's not like I go, oh, it's Vicky.
No, you
like,
do that.
I don't
you
start do that, watching but... and go, oh, it's Vicky. Instead, I'm just like, who's this?
Exactly. it's not like it's a Perry episode or something.
Well, yeah.
It's because she feels the same, like, she feels the same niche as Susan, right? She, yeah. And especially in these stories where she's with Ian and Barbara, it's the Susan relationship. She starts to sort of come in on her own when she's with Stephen, but even then, she falls between Susan and Dodo. And, yeah. Like, Dodo is a much better character. Susan mm-hmm. becomes a great character when she gets to grow up, but on her own.
Well, Susan, the character's been ripped off too. They need to finish her story, and it's, you know, and they had a great couple of different times, great opportunities to be able to do that. And, you know, they could have done something in the 50th anniversary. They could have done it in the 60th, and they could do it anytime. And the actress said she's wanted to come back and that she's willing to do it, even just to
big
do
big finish.
I know.
Oh, big finish.
Big finish. But big finish isn't canon. So, yeah.
That's an awful thing to say.
I know. I know. I know it hurt you. What did you guys think at home? What do you guys think? Please, feedback at earthstationwho.com. You know, this has been a interesting episode tonight, folks. Thank you for sticking with us after the ranting at the beginning and the monologuing. It was always great. Let's thank everyone for joining us. Kieran, thank you so much, my friend.
Thank you. It's been so great to come back.
It's always great to have you. Want to promote your work?
Yeah, sure. So I've got a Doctor Who podcast called Please Attend Carefully, all about the Master. We just dropped our trailer for season 2, and season 2 starts next week. What date is that? That is the 10th with Frontier in Space.
Awesome. Awesome, awesome. That should be awesome. I like that episode a lot, actually.
Yeah, that's a fun one.
Yep. And let's thank our regulars, of course. Mr. Mike, we've made it through another one, my friend.
We did. And as always, it's my pleasure.
Anything you want to promote or shout out about?
Both of us are going to be in Greenville this weekend. I don't know how many people are going to be listening to this before that, but or watching this before that, but we will have a good time in Greenville Zero. Well, you know, that's usual the case.
Yeah.
So, but I always like going to that convention, and then I've got a convention coming up in May. I'll be in Knoxville, Tennessee for FrankenCon. And I will actually be at a comic shop in for Free Comic Day. I'll be at a comic shop in Tucker, Georgia, Infinite Realities. So
awesome.
Those are my upcoming dates.
Nice. And Ms. Mary, thank you as always.
Oh, thank you guys. It's always fun talking to you.
How can people find your artwork?
You can find me at maryogle.com or on Etsy at eVision Arts.
Awesome. Thank you guys for listening. Please, you know, if you get a chance, rate us, like us, subscribe, you know, all the above. And a thumbs up would always be great up on YouTube. That's the, you know, how the algorithms help saying, hey, listen to this Doctor Who podcast. So gotta love the algorithms. I think they're going to be the death of me yet, but that's another story on itself. Always write us feedback at ourstationwho.com. Please, you can find us up on YouTube, wherever fine podcasts are found. And also now we are up on Instagram. So check us out. We got cool stuff up there. So Instagram is definitely a great way to find us. We also have our Facebook group, and we put all types of kinds of stuff up there. It's like I try to put up stuff up there every day. You know, new memes, new Doctor Who news, you know, videos, you name it, I found it. So I found earlier today, I almost put up on there. It was Catherine Tate and David Tennant being Elton John and Kiki D. So you don't go breaking my heart. And it was awesome.
That's pretty awesome.
And David Tennant was not Elton John. I'll just say that.
I was literally just going to say, I see him more as a Kiki, you know.
And you got it. So it's pretty awesome. And, you know, definitely, folks, definitely check it out. We thank you for everything you guys do for us. If you want, help support us. Patreon is the best way to do it. And then, of course, you know, if you want, we also have a TeePublic store. So check that out. You know, we got cool ESO swag up there, or Station Who t-shirts, a couple different ones. I think we have like 3 or 4 of them up there right now. So, you know, definitely check it out. We got some cool stuff. And I'm always playing with ideas for new designs. So those will be popping up eventually up there. So definitely check it out. And until next time, on behalf of myself, Kieran Moffitt, Michael Gordon, and Mary Ogle. My name is Mike Faber. We'll see you next time on Earth Station Who. We only got a month, folks. Come on, we can do it. Yay. Peace.
You have been listening to Earth Station Who, a pop culture podcast dedicated to all things Doctor Who, featuring talents from throughout space and time. All topics on the show are the sole opinions of the individuals and are to be used for entertainment value alone. You can subscribe to our show wherever fine podcasts are found, or check out our website, earthstationwho.com. Don't forget to check us out on Facebook or Instagram, and if you enjoyed the show, please write to us at feedback@earthstationwho.com. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you on the next journey of Earth Station Who.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.